And good morning, Vancouver. You are listening to CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting from the beautiful campus of the University of British Columbia in Vancouver. I am Jason. You are listening to Tweets and Tunes here on Wednesday, November the 7th. Happy Wednesday to everyone. Of course, there was a little bit of a event apparently down in the U.S. last night. There was an election for this position called the president. And much to the excitement of many, many, many people in the U.S. and around the world, Barack Obama did indeed win a second term as the president of the United States. So 4 more years for Barack. I was watching a little bit of CNN and a couple of the other stations that were broadcasting the election result, which I think was every U.S. station with the exception of the movie channel. It was, of course, the rally supporters for Obama in Chicago. So much excitement there. Obviously, they were very thrilled by the election results. Not so thrilled by the election results, of course, is when they panned to the Romney supporters, where the entire room... Now, you know, here's one of the things that I think, as the pundits will talk about and have been talking about, one of the reasons why Romney did not do so well in the election was many of the groups that he alienated, women, gay, immigrants. And when you looked at the room of Romney supporters, you could see kind of that cross-section was missing, as the entire room looked like all the white people who refused to believe that Styx broke up many years ago. But there we are. We can now get on with the rest of our life because the elections are over and will no longer dominate our news for too much longer. So let's get on with the music this morning. We've got a great show. We've got Eric Elper of E1 Music and, of course, of CTV Music fame. Twitter fame is going to be joining us here just around 7 o'clock. We'll look forward to having Eric on. Really excited to have him on one of Billboard's top 140 people on Twitter. And just an incredible depth and breadth of knowledge regarding the music industry and social media. So it's going to be a real treat and a real pleasure to have Eric on the show. We've got some great tunes coming up. Lots of local Vancouver indie music. And you can reach us throughout the show via phone at 604-822-2487. Give us a call if there's something that you'd like to hear. You can also find us on Twitter at Tweets and Tunes and on Facebook at facebook.com/tweetsandtunes. As well, make sure you stop by our brand new spanking website powered by Crave Media, and you can find that at tweetsandtunes.com. All right, well, let's get you out of bed and get your morning on with a little Brastronaut.
I can't erase. Damn those bastards all. You can't persuade them all. I'll meet you sometime, I'll meet you. If only just to complete who ever you can call. It helps to please them all. Say now, alright, I'm okay.
understand to waver from its course so slightly. I do believe in symmetry, but it's hard to see when we're living so awkwardly. My love grew slow like coral reefs beneath the mellow waves of a woman ocean. And left behind the static lines of home to design a new horizon.
Thank you. CATR is proud to sponsor the 17th Amnesty International Film Festival, taking place November 2nd through the 4th at Pacific Cinemathèque Theatre in downtown Vancouver. The festival will show 9 films from around the world, which will highlight a variety of human rights matters and will include guest speakers, the presence of other community groups, and ways for the public to take action on said matters. So come join in on one of the biggest human rights film festivals in the country. For more information or to buy tickets, you can check out www.amnesty.ca/VFF.
And good morning, you're back on Tweets and Tunes. We just heard Cookie Duster, and yes indeed, Daddy Has the Medicine, from their album When Flying Was Easy, and before that, you heard Brastonaut from the album Mean Sun and their song Bounce, which was supposed to be the first song if it hadn't been for the scratchy CD. And kicking off that set, the Sheepdogs from their self-titled album as part of our SaskCon and all that is good from Saskatchewan. Of course, Sheepdogs really broke onto the scene late last year when they were featured as the first, the only unsigned band ever to grace the cover of Rolling Stone magazine. And that did not hurt their career at all. Their new self-titled album is fantastic. Lots of a little Guess Who, little CCR. Definitely some good Canadiana and rock there. Just an amazing, amazing album from a great group of guys. And yeah, that was the set. We've got a band coming up here next. Was out on... oh, good heavens, what was it? Saturday night, last weekend, and had the opportunity to head downtown. An event put on by Oswaldo Perez, of course, host of the Morning After Show here Tuesdays on CITR. And Oswaldo had a Day of the Dead celebration, had some great art and some great bands playing, one of which was Los Furios, and I had a chance to sit down and talk with their incredible trombone player, and we'll talk about that here in just a little bit. But let's hear one of the songs that they played that evening.
You couldn't spare a dime, but you took it all anyway. Ran it to the bottom, then you walked away. You fought your way to the top, but it's a long way down, and the bottom's gonna drop. All the things you made on the way are now long gone, and you're the only one to blame. Nothing to say, so you fight your way to the top. But it's a long way down, and the bottom's gonna drop. No one cares what you got. Selfish indifference sure cost a lot. See, it ain't funny making lots of money. The land of milk and honey.
Call in. How the mind. lots of money. The land of milk and honey.
Much better than I were alive then. For one thing, it was the end of that decade when I arrived and you were here in Michigan. I crossed the border this morning with no trouble at all, picked up a car at the airport. She said, well, isn't Canada part of America now? And was surprised. I am lost in the city, but don't take pity on me. I am lost in the city, but don't take pity. For every color of autumn and every leaf that's gotten, there's a weight that falls. claim of freedom and an offering of reprieve in the woods here of Michigan. And every mile of the highway puts a mile behind me, a mile between me and the pain. Were that true, I would drive until the land turned to the water of Lake Superior. I am lost in the city bay. Pity on me. I am lost in the city, babe. Don't take pity.
I'm Peter Mansbridge, and you're listening to CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.
Just be a
All right, and we're back on CITR. You are listening to Tweets and Tunes, heard here every Wednesday morning from 6:30 to 8 a.m. And you can find us online at citr.ca. That was the fantastic Wolfheart from their album Subtle Bodies and Reality. Before that, you heard Krista Couture with some great Canadiana in You Were Here in Michigan. Deerhoof, the breakup songs, and We Do Parties, and kicking that all off was Los Furious from the Never Look Back album and How the Mighty Have Fallen. Well, it is my absolute pleasure this morning to welcome to the show Mr. Eric Elper from E1 Music, PR, of course, Billboard Magazine's 140 Best on Twitter, and CTV's music correspondence. All of that read quickly from his Twitter profile. Good morning, Eric. How are you doing?
Good, Jason. How are you?
I am doing fantastic. Thanks again so much for taking the time to join us from the Big Smoke, and just a real absolute pleasure to have you on the show here. I really...
Dude, pleasure's all mine. Big fan of what you do, and you know, you can't get a better name than Tweets and Tunes.
Yeah, you know, it's right up your wheelhouse there.
And, yeah.
I love love following you on Twitter, love your blog, and for those who don't follow Eric, you can find him on Twitter at ThatEricElper and his website, ThatEricElper.com. So much to do every day with music, social media, from just about every era. It's incredible. It is my one of my absolute daily reads, and so make sure you get on there and check it out. So, Eric, let's dive right into it. You know, one of the things that I really enjoy when I'm reading through your blog is just the depth and breadth of the knowledge and just how much it spans the music history. When you're thinking of the changes in the industry over the last 10 to 20 years, what do you see as, you know, one of the best changes, where the direction is headed, and what do you see as one of the ones you look back and you're like, nah, I'm not really happy with the way that panned out as far as the industry went?
Yeah, it's probably the exact same one. It's it's probably the invention of the MP3 and also just of the internet in general. I mean, the ability for artists to and managers to bypass the traditional media, newspapers, radio, Much Music, and that kind of stuff, and go directly to fans is an amazing opportunity for everybody, whether you're a manager, a publicist, a band, an artist, a tour promoter. But it's also the worst, because obviously what it has done is it's created walls of ownership around the artist's songs that people still need to get paid for. And of course, with piracy and LimeWire and those kind of companies have allowed file sharing to grow and really succeed in what they want to do, which is essentially trade music for free. There's no easy answer anymore. I mean, I don't think there ever was. It's very easy to look back and blame the record labels for possibly putting their heads in the collective sand and saying that, you know what, they were greedy or that they just didn't get it. But the problem is that, you know, we're all record labels. We're not record label charity, and we're not nonprofit organizations that do this for free. So people still need to get paid. And I think, you know, the big question that we're still trying to figure out, and it's never going to be a yes or no, here's how it's done blanket situation, is going to be how can you, as a fan, respect the artist's rights for copyright and ownership, and how can the artist still get paid to do what they want to do at the same time? Because it's not about, well, if we give everything away for free, whether it's an album or a song or a video, not everybody has the ability to make money on the road. Not everybody is going to be selling 150 T-shirts a night. There are, you know, there's still 98% of bands out there that are still, you know, making less than $30,000 in North America. So I guess it all depends on what side of the industry that you're on. And, you know, every idea is worthy of one to think about and to see if that's the one that people are going to follow through on.
Now, that brings up a great and an interesting point, because, you know, as I read online more and more about, you know, the degradation of revenues from, you know, digital music for the artist, you know, I see more and more talk about 360-degree revenue and marketing plans between labels and artists, where, you know, before it was, hey, you know what, here's your advance on your album. You know, your album sells great. If not, you owe us money. You know, you're in hock for life. But I see it starting to, you know, rear its head now, where, you know, there's the discussion around, well, you know what, we'll share a little bit more revenue from what we're seeing on the music end in return for revenue from concerts, from merchandise back from the artists, in the areas where the artists would, in today's day, certainly make the majority of their money. How much do you see that permeating, the future?
Not a lot anymore. It was a really sexy idea in the beginning of it. At E1 Music Canada specifically, where I work, it was an idea that we threw around in the office but never really followed through on. And one of the reasons was is that I think we just have this philosophy that excluding A&R, excluding promotion and publicity and all the wonderful things that record labels do for and with artists, one of the things that they are, they're a bank, and they're a bank that fronts money so that the artist can actually go and create an album, and that's given and that's termed an advance, which is then paid back based on your record sales. And historically, record labels have never really been all that awesome when it comes to, helping out or actually sharing revenue when it comes to, the lower class income bands or the middle class income bands per se. It's great if you're a Springsteen or Lady Gaga or Justin Bieber and you're making anywhere between $20 and $50 million a year, even when you don't even have an album out. But where I was cautious about working with artists on 360 deals was that if they needed money to do something in Canada, we're blessed that there were always funds available if you qualified, whether it was Factor or the Ontario Arts Council grants, for instance, or the Ontario Folk Festival Association. So we never really got involved with anything other than the actual record or on the distribution side, putting it into stores. I was always cautious about having more money given to an artist that wasn't necessarily one that there was no guarantee that they would actually sell more merchandise or that they would get more money on the road. And that's not the problem becomes is that that's not really what we should be doing per se. I mean, I certainly don't want to handle merchandise. I don't want to handle tour planning and routing and bookings. I as a publicist, I want to work with the media and have fun doing it. But record labels, should just kind of stick to what they know best, and that's marketing and promotion of records and overseeing A&R if it's needed. And the 360 deal, I think, was a little bit of an idea of how to generate more revenue using money that they were already sitting in the bank, and they were trying to end up with more revenue, not necessarily helping out the artist in the long run. I still think artists needed to have a team involved, whether it was a manager, the booking agent, the record label, great songs, a really good merchandise person that handles things like that. You wouldn't ask a plumber to fix your roof, so sometimes why ask a record label to handle, your merchandise and bookings? Some do it really, really well. Arts and Crafts does it really, really well. Sub Pop does it amazingly well. Not everybody are those record labels, though.
Right. So, as artists look to, as we look at the stream of revenue available now to artists, to record labels, where do you see services like Spotify and Pandora coming, or where are they heading? Obviously, they're having more and more of an impact. We saw the article of the lawsuit launched recently to reduce revenues to the musicians. Where do you see these services, where do you see their spot in the industry, and where do you see that going?
Yeah, as a fan, I love them. I mean, imagine having every single piece of recorded music at your fingertips. And I mean everything. Every hundreds of millions of songs, hundreds of thousands of albums, albums that you didn't even think existed, albums that you couldn't even find in your local record store, even if they could, order it on your behalf. Essentially, if you listen to your customer, base and you give them what they want, you will never fail. And when you stop listening to your customers and you dictate how they should consume your product, that's when you will always fail. And they've done it, and the record labels have been lucky where nobody was asking for a cassette. Nobody was asking for an 8-track. Nobody was asking for a CD. But what they were looking for was more music, an easier way to transfer music and listen to music how they wanted in the car. So it's not necessarily the format per se, because that's all it really is. I mean, your MP3 isn't, you know, any more different from a format, because your hard drive is the actual carrier of it. So if you give people what they want, I think it'll ultimately kill piracy. But people want a convenience that it's an affordable price, and Rhapsody, RDO, Spotify can deliver that. There's now talk and a lot of buzz that Apple is going to be going to streaming on their iTunes site very, very shortly. They're just finishing up some of the major label contracts that required them to do that. The problem is that, you know, the numbers are out there and they're real, that, you know, artists are getting 0.000006 cents per song. So that's like, even if you're getting, you know, 200 million streams on Spotify, you're only making a couple hundred dollars, which, you know, it's not a lot of money for that kind of popularity. So you can imagine being an independent artist, just what, you know, how little you're actually making. But the idea is that you use that to parlay that into getting more people into the shows, buying more merch and ideas like that. It's a little bit too early to see whether or not it actually works. And again, it all depends on what side of the fence you're on. If you're Taylor Swift, for instance, you know, and I know some people are listening and rolling their eyes, but it's a really good example that, you know, she did not have her album Red on the streaming services, and she ended up selling 1.2 million copies in North America. Mumford & Sons did, and ended up selling 700,000 copies. So it's one of those things where every manager and every record label has to think about, you know, what the fans are and how they like to consume music and who's online and who's using their services, because you know, what works for one artist doesn't necessarily mean it for the other. But if I were to predict, I think everything is going to go streaming. I think in the next couple of years, what you'll find is that the telecommunications companies like Bell or Rogers or AT&T, Astral and things like that, on your cable bill, you'll end up with another price or another cost to download or stream as much music as you possibly want. And that will be through your internet service provider. And whether or not it will take care of the piracy issue, that's one thing. But I think that's where it's definitely going. And people have actually, you know, really opened their ideas with streaming music, because I think that this generation of 8 to 12 year olds, for instance, are used to now listening and watching what they want, when they want, however many times they want, and they don't want to be dictated by playlists. They don't want to be dictated by people in power. They will enjoy, you know, people deciding on their blog, for instance, what's cool and what's hot and what's new, but they want to, you know, watch that video 45 times in a row if they want to on YouTube, or they want to listen, you know, to the new, you know, She and Him album or the new Dinosaur Jr. album over and over and over again. And once those kids become 14, 15, 16, 17, 18 years old and become real consumers of products, because that's essentially what it is, they're not going to be used to ownership. And I think that the record labels have to start thinking about the idea of how to sell something that people don't want to own, per se.
You know, that's interesting. I think back to the article that you wrote about, you know, the industry, you know, the world needing another iPod, you know, needing that next, you know, generation, the next medium to change. Now, is streaming enough? And I, you know, because I have to think that, you know, you're looking specifically for the artist, and, you know, we play, you know, our focus here is on indie artists and local music and everyone, you know, trying to get to the point, you know, the dream is to, you know, do what you do for a living. And, you know, you look at this ever seemingly shrinking pool of revenue going to the artist. And, you know, certainly if it goes the way of streaming, You know, that's certainly going to have an impact on it as well. Now, is that it? Is that the next technology move you think is just to straight streaming, you know, 3G, 4G, LTE enabled devices to stream wherever you are and we go away from the playlist?
Yeah, I do. And then after that, there's probably just going to be a little microchip that's going to go in your head that you'll just hit your eyelid, and then all of a sudden, you know, your favorite song will come up in your brain. Where do you go from there? I mean, you know, that article about that the industry needs another iPod was just one that just spoke about that. You know, really, iTunes helped create this wave of popularity of music. I mean, think about it. Music has never been more popular than ever before. You know, it's everywhere. It's in every movie. It's in every television show. It's in every store that you walk into. It's in, you know, every commercial. And people still need music to get by and to live and to use, you know, for happiness and sadness at the same time, and it's extremely important. But what the iPod has done is just allowed it, like the Walkman, to have music on the go and carry it with you. And I'm not sure that's something that's going to be coming in the next little bit after streaming. You know, usually there's a new format every 12 or 15 years or so. If you look back from when vinyl records came out, the actual phonograph had a long, long life and still continues to this day with, you know, roughly about 2-5% of the North American marketplace. But, you know, everything else after that was maybe just a little bit longer than a decade. But it seems that one didn't really have anything to do with the other except for how music is being consumed. The actual vinyl record, for instance, really had nothing to do with what followed, which was the 8-track, and then the cassette, and then all of a sudden, you know, you've got this CD that you can, you know, have 70 minutes worth of music on in relation to 45 before when you were listening to a cassette tape on either side of it. But the one thing that has happened is that because of iTunes, for instance, it has kind of glided the consumer base and record labels and artists into streaming, because that's what iTunes was, you know, designed for, either byproduct rather than download it. So now that you can listen to 30 seconds or 60 seconds or 90 seconds on Amazon, on other kind of sites like that. So I don't think that anything is going to be coming down in the next, I would say, at least, you know, 7 or 8 years. But that's not to say that the CD is dead. It's far from it. It just all depends on what kind of format that your fans are looking for. If you're country music, for instance, you still love that CD. You know, they're one of the biggest buyers of the format. If you're kind of into indie alt rock, you probably haven't bought a CD in maybe 2 years.
Mm-hmm. So what do you think, you know, looking back, was the bigger game changer then for music? Was it the advent of the MP3 or the iPod?
I think you can't have the iPod without the MP3, so I'm probably going to place all my bets on with the MP3. I mean, just the fact that music became a series of ones and zeros looking at it, it did so much for it, where you can have unlimited music on your iTunes player, for instance, but only so much on your iPod. MP3s were easily transferable. They actually changed the way how people listen to music as well, where people are listening to it on little tiny, you know, ear pods. But that's like a kind of another byproduct of it, is that the Beats by Dre headphones, for instance, or really high tech headphones, kind of fill in the blanks of what the MP3 song doesn't actually provide for you anymore. So I think the MP3 is probably, you know, we're going to look back on it and say, you know, it was probably the most popular format, and easily, I think, one of the most, you know, I mean, just out of the way consuming any kind of entertainment device or any kind of, you know, format. I think that MP3 player changed everything. It changed, the actual MP3 changed sound, it changed technology, it changed people, it changed, you know, musicians and how they record and how they are in the studio now, where people are recording as that's not necessarily for vinyl, except if you're Jack White, for instance. But now you're recording as if it's going to be heard as an MP3, and then everything else, whether you're listening to it on massive headphones or through those little white, you know, buds that come with the iPod, but everything is designed for that kind of warmth or lack of warmth, for instance, that people think about it in that kind of a way. So I think definitely, you know, the MP3 itself is probably one of the great inventions.
So what then, you know, obviously now with the onset of this and the streaming, the popularity increasing in streaming, what's the future for, you know, traditional radio and satellite radio?
I think it's still going to be there. I think it's incredibly important that people get their local programming in their own city. You know, people still need sports. People still need local weather. People still need local news and entertainment. And people still want, you know, that local music scene, for instance. I'm not a big fan so much of watching those radio formats where the top 40 songs being played in a station in Vancouver, the exact same top 40 songs that are being played in Toronto, that are being played in Halifax, and so forth. There are certain artists that are huge in Montreal that are nothing in Timmins, and vice versa. And I love that. I love the fact that sitting at my desk at work, I can turn on any radio station that's traditional, and listen to all the different kind of personalities, all the different kind of vibes, and the flavor of each city. You know, when I listen to a traditional radio station in California, it's much different than if I listen to it in Vancouver. If I listen to one in Toronto, it's very much different than in Sudbury. And I think that the personalities behind the microphone, people like you, are so important. And they help create fans of music. They're one of the reasons why, my guess is that you got into it and I got into it was, I mean, I was a kid, you know, 7 and 8 and 9 years old, listening to, you know, my radio underneath my covers, you know, before I went to bed. I mean, that's how obsessive I was with it, being a geek. And it sounds like a storybook, but it's one of those cliches that actually I lived, was I was listening to, you know, certain radio stations, and on a clear day, on a clear night, I could hear, you know, picking up sounds from New York, and I can hear, you know, sounds from Cleveland, and it was wild. I mean, it was unreal. So I think that local flavor is extremely important to have, and extremely important when you're on campus radio too, playing and talking about the issues and playing those songs that don't get played on commercial and traditional radio.
Well, you heard it here first, folks. Eric Elper believes that Tweets and Tunes and CITR is the preeminent driver of music here in Canada.
You bet.
Yeah,
you bet, man. It was why I got into music in the first place. I mean, campus radio in general is where I got my start at CITRY in Toronto, and got to hear my own voice on the air and get a little bit of popularity amongst my friends who thought that was the coolest thing in the world, and I got to play what I wanted to play and do weird things like give away, you know, $1,000 on the air if anybody was listening and calling in, and nobody really ever did. But that was where we all grew. Like, if you look at the people that are in power in the music industry now, they all came from campus radio. Almost all of them did. And they got their buzz and their love from being on the radio and programming and directing and volunteering. And it was one of the great things that university offered to me when I was at York University. It wasn't necessarily the classes, but just working at their local radio station totally turned me on. And I met a lot of really great people that, you know, 20 and 30 years ago, you know, since then, actually not 30, I'm not that old, but probably about, you know, 20 years since then, I'm still maintaining a lot of really great friendships from people that I met through campus radio.
You know, when you talk about, you know, the campus, the radio and the sound there and the bands, you know, I every time we have a guest on or we have a band in the station, I marvel at the fact that, you know, we could play a new song from a new Canadian band every day, every minute, on every show, and not have to repeat. Like, we've got such a glut of great music, you know, here in Canada. And I think a lot of that relates back to, you know, the ability to, you know, put out good music. You know, when you talk about the, you know, the fact that we have, you know, you can take your MacBook Pro and you record a song now on better technology than the Stones had when they did Satisfaction.
Mm.
And, you know, and to get them to get your music out there is so much easier to do. Well, infinitely easier than it used to be. But that creates the problem then. How do you differentiate yourself from all of the other bands out there? And, you know, you're obviously, your role there in PR is massive in that. But how do the bands do that on the cheap? Obviously, social media is going to be a big part of that. But what are ways in which bands can get out there and actually differentiate themselves in a way that's going to have some meaning?
Don't suck and be great. there's no other way for it. You can have the greatest social media technology in the world. You can have the greatest technology to reach each person in your country, in your continent, in the world at your disposal. But if you suck as a band, you're going to suck 10 times more when you're online. There's still the greatness that has to be there. Because as a band in Vancouver, your competition, you know, isn't Slam Dunk, isn't bands that are on, you know, filed under music, for instance. It's Bruce Springsteen. It's still the Beatles. It's still, you know, it's Diamond Rings. It's Lady Hawk. It's White Horse. It's Godspeed You Black Emperor. It's, you know, Mother Mother and Bat for Lashes and Young Rival and all of those bands, because there's only so much music that somebody out there can listen to and want to concentrate on. And I think just as whether you record it in the basement of your house like Owl City did and have a huge hit with Fireflies, or whether, you know, you're recording at Abbey Road, it still has to be great. And you know, obviously, you know, there's things like with Facebook and Twitter and the slow reemergence of MySpace. There's still, you know, tips that I always give bands to do, like, you know, always be nice. You know, you can still blow your fans' minds by wishing somebody a happy birthday every once in a while, because Facebook makes that really, really easy to create a lot of really great content, whether you're on the road and you're filming, you know, a video blog, for instance, of 3 minutes of you just sitting in the van or warming up or doing sound check, or, you know, releasing a free song that you're recording now, and you just have to constantly give content to the fans, or else they're just going to forget about you and think that nothing is happening. So you always have to be kind of front and center, but not always promoting, you know, because people just don't like selling or all the time if you're selling a product, but people also just don't like to be sold to all the time, but they will buy into you. And I think that there's a big difference. You know, if you're a fan of Diamond Rings, for instance, you probably love everything that comes with, mm-hmm. with liking Diamond Rings. It's like Bowie, you know, you like the philosophy, you like the sexuality part of it. You like, you know, maybe the politics of that artist. You like how they sound during interviews. You like how they look.
You like and the high top, feel, the high talk. Top haircut.
And, yeah. And so I think, you know, revealing more and more about yourself, and don't be afraid to do that. You know, when artists like Led Zeppelin or the Beatles or the Stones were around in the 60s, I mean, they were untouchable. You couldn't even get near them if you wanted to. But now, you know, I can find out everything about my favorite artists at my fingertips, and I think fans want that. They want to know that you're still an artist and that you're still, you know, a little bit, you know, above them in terms of the popularity scale, but they also want you to sometimes answer them when they're asking you a question on Twitter, and don't be afraid to do that.
Fantastic. Eric, thanks so much. You know, it was, we'll let you go here. I know we had you here now for a little bit over half an hour, but just wanted to thank you so much for taking the time. Just incredible insight, obviously, into the industry. And I know that the bands that listen to the show and the fans that listen to the show are going to absolutely just love it. We'll be, of course, podcasting this later today. But Eric Elper, they can find you again on Twitter at TheEricElper and on your website at ThatEricElper and on the website at ThatEricElper.com. Facebook as well. Thanks again so much for taking the time and stopping by here today, Eric.
Hey, thanks, Jason. You know, it's been a real pleasure, and I'm sure that the audience already knows this, but, you know, you are definitely one of the best out there, and, you know, your enthusiasm for music and social media is pretty amazing. So that's awesome to see, and it's been great talking to you.
Awesome, Eric. Again, thanks so much, and we'll look forward to having you back again on the show hopefully very soon.
Cool. Will do. Have a great day.
Okay, thanks, Eric.
Bye-bye.
All right, that was Eric Elper from E1 Music, and that was a dial tone. All right, we're a little bit behind here, so back to the music, and Little Lisa's Hotcakes coming at you first thing at the 7:30 hour.
Let him pass the
CITR is celebrating the 75th anniversary of UBC Radio Excellence, 30 years on the FM dial, and 30 years of Discorder magazine. Your one and only CITR 101.9 FM is inviting all CITR alumni and friends to our alumni weekend this November 16th and 17th. On the 16th, we'll be kicking it live on location at Perch on 337 Hastings around 5 p.m. for some beers, cheers, and cooling with peers. The 17th, come to Thea's Lounge for some Give Us Your Love brunch at 11 a.m. Find out more about what's going down at the station and the progress we have made over the years. Shortly after, join us for tours of our beloved station and learn about our space in the new sub. Come to our birthday party on Saturday evening at Chapel Arts with CITR alumni Lisa Marr and Culture Shock performing, as well as Gang Signs, Fine Mist, Carolyn Mark, and Channels 3 and 4. Reminisce about the good old days, bumping the shows of the past, as we have dedicated this special weekend to hearing our alumni on the airwaves. So come and cool out with us on the freaking weekend and have you some fun. But don't forget to register for events. Visit CITR.ca for more details.
Like a snake calling on a phone. I've got no time to be alone. Stop coming at me all the time. You better think I'll lose my mind.
Australia and Canada are both countries with a whole lot of space to create some of the wildest sounds on the planet. Join your host Matthew as he explores the musical heritage of his native Australia and features fresh sounds from Canada's independent music world. That's Stranded, the Australian-Canadian music show, live Fridays from 6 to 7:30 p.m. on CITR 101.9 FM.
Thank you. Become a friend of CITR and get great discounts in the Commercial Drive area at
Audio Pile, Bone Rattle Music, High Life Records, and the People's Co-op Bookstore.
It pays to be a friend of CITR. To learn more, come visit us in room 233 of the sub on UBC campus or check us out online at citr.ca.
Are you a current UBC grad student? If so, then listen up, because the Graduate Student Society lets UBC grads book rooms and spaces in the newly renovated grad student building. Be sure to take advantage of what the facility has to offer. The rooms come equipped with sound systems and can host up to 300 people. Even better, as grad students, you don't have to pay booking fees. Not a grad? Don't worry. The Tia Corner House is open to the public, as in the Corner Pub, opening earlier next year. For more information, contact booking manager Rob at bookings@gss.ubc.ca.
Okay, we're back. CITR 101.9 FM. Thanks again to Eric Elper for joining us this morning. Could spend hours talking to the guy. His knowledge knows no bounds. Just a great guest to have. And again, you can find him on Twitter. If you love music, even the smallest amount, follow this guy on Twitter. Every day he's got something just like several times throughout the day, just incredible music facts, what's going on, music scenes, new CD releases, technology on the music side. And you can find him again on Twitter at @ThatEricElper. You can also find CITR on Twitter at CITR Radio, and you can check out CITR on Facebook as well. And of course, Tweets and Tunes. You can find us on Twitter at Tweets and Tunes. Stop by our website at www.tweetsandtunes.com. So we just heard Vancouver's own Lisa's Hot Cakes from their album Love Hurts, and that was Paralyzed. And then finishing that off, it was Tirana Horse from the Garbage Bears EP and Rumble Tumble. And if you're wondering what that noise and unzipping is in the background, no need to get worried. That's just DJ Jack Velvet in the studio taking off his jacket, slamming the door, giving us feedback on our top-notch radio show this morning here at CITR. Okay, we are going to get right back to the music. Let's play some more SaskCon. We heard the Sheepdogs earlier in the show from the lovely hamlet of Saskatoon. And this is a little rah-rah from Regina.
It's not just that I was scared back then. I was scared of when you finally realize what I hide inside a soul that is hurt and cried through cheats and lies. I'm sorry. Time you
It's in your head, the poetry, it's in your head.
CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver. Well, that does it. A completely full and nutritious show for you this morning on Tweets and Tunes. DJ Jack Velvet and the Suburban Jungle breathing down my neck and not in a good way. Coming right up. You can find us throughout the week on Twitter at Tweets and Tunes, on Facebook at Facebook.com/tweetsandtunes, and on our website at www.tweetsandtunes.com. I am Jason. I will see you next Wednesday, and now is that time when I turn it over to the loquacious DJ Jack Velvet.